Hello and welcome to the Texas Tribune Tribcast. This is our first taping in front of a live studio audience. I'm reporter Elise Hugh, joined by the usual Tribcast gang, Evan Smith, our CEO and editor-in-chief.
Hello.
Managing editor Ross Ramsey.
Howdy.
And Ben Philpott of KUT News and the Tribune.
Good evening.
So this being our 46th episode, we're not going to change up the format. We're going to do four topics. Each one of us brings a topic to the table. The four topics today: the Texas Tribune poll and what it said about the governor's race, the poll and what it said about the strength of the Tea Party here in Texas, the ongoing budget woes for the state of Texas, is the deficit bigger than we originally thought, and Team Perry, Team Rick Perry's campaign rollout of its first television ad and whether that helped or hurt them. Ross, let's start with you.
Well, the top line in the poll is that the governor got 39% to Bill White's 33%. That race has tightened up a little bit. Our poll in May had them at 9. This poll has them at 6. Interestingly, 22% are undecided. 31% say they identify or commune with the Tea Party, which is kind of interesting. And libertarians in statewide races are getting 5 to 7%. So, you know, there's a large number of sort of discontented, I'm shopping type voters around. And the question is whether those voters come home to the Republicans or whether they're willing to go with Bill White. Can he close the sale? Can Perry bring him back?
Now, from the last poll to this poll, the governor lost 5 points. Mayor White lost 2 points. The undecideds are way up. As you said, the libertarian has 5 points. What I think is interesting is, while there may have been a tightening of this race and the governor has lost votes, the votes that he's lost seem not to have gone over to Mayor White. They seem to have just gone into the I don't know what to do camp.
Right.
So
right.
While it's good news maybe for the white folks that the race is closer, it's not necessarily good news in that they've gone from Perry to White. They're just open to considering the possibility of supporting somebody other than the governor, but they could just easily go back.
The theory here is that they don't go from one candidate to the other, that they go to, okay, I'm willing to shop. I got this toothpaste. I'm ready to say, well, okay, maybe that's not my toothpaste. I'll look around.
Right.
What do you got? And this is White's chance to close the sale or not close the sale. They might go from undecided back to Perry.
But isn't it, Ben, the case that it's now middle of September? White doesn't have a whole lot of time left to close that sale.
No, and you know, I've been told by a couple of pollsters that when you look at undecided voters, especially if they identify themselves as either moderate or independent, the vast majority of those will at some point break Republican in the state of Texas anyway, traditionally. So, you know, you look at that, then Perry can sit back and say, well, hey, everything will be fine. Those 22%, 60, 70% will break my way and everything will be fine. Of course, Perry has been governor for 10 years. So Bill White can say, yes, but you've been governor for 10 years and 22% of the state is undecided about whether or not, you know, so maybe it won't break your way this time because people have had so long to get to know you.
We should say a word, Ross, about why the 22% undecided
is so big.
Came in. Why is that so big?
Well, because we didn't press. You know, you can, in polls that are closer to election day, and we'll, you know, we may do this, you say, who are you for in the governor's race? And they say this one or that one. And if they say undecided, you say, okay, if you had to vote today, who would you vote for? We didn't press on that last question. So we left them out there as shoppers for now. It's relatively early. I mean, we're not out of time at all.
7 weeks away.
20 years ago, at this point, Clady Williams is up 17 or 18 points. Ronald Reagan at this point, or actually at the end of September in 1980, was down 8 points. I mean, there's plenty of time for these things to move around. Perry just went up on TV. We just started the part of the race that's kind of visible to most of the public. You know, for the political infrastructure, for the money people, for geeks, this race has been going on for some time.
But pointing at you?
Yeah, I was talking to you. For most of the public, this is when they really tune into this thing. The kids are back in school, Labor Day is over, okay, what do we got?
And I just think a lot of people who are polled just don't want to say, you know, and we've talked about this on the Tribcast before. When you get called and asked a pretty private question about how you're going to vote, you may not really want to answer the question. And then what this actually reminds me of something that happened during the primary, which is that when I was getting together a focus group of undecided Republican voters to watch the second debate with us, they all said they were undecided, but in the focus group, they were all for Perry. So, so while they may be saying they're undecided, they probably have a leaning one way or the other that will likely, as Ben says, benefit the governor come November.
Does the governor have a problem that he's been in office for 10 years and he's still having a hard time in almost every poll taken getting to 50%?
Yes and no. I mean, the 50% sort of line in polls is, you know, people talk about the reelect number, and that's if you could vote for this official or somebody else, unnamed, who would you vote for? And if that's under 50%, that's usually what that's referring to. Perry hadn't gotten to 50%, but you know, you don't need 50% to win. He won last
time
with 39%,
that right?
You know, so all you need is more. And right now he has more.
Right. The other thing I wonder about is that there was a disparity between the difference between Perry and White and the difference between Dewhurst and Chavez Thompson.
Right.
And I asked about this the other day. I remembered back to 98 when you saw a lot of Bush Sharp bumper stickers.
Right.
John Sharp almost won the lieutenant governor's race despite the fact that George Bush blew out Gary Morrow, and the assumption was that you had a bunch of people who voted for Bush but then voted for Sharp. I wonder if, given the size of the disparity between Perry and White and the size of the disparity between Dewhurst and Chavez Thompson, if there are white Dewhurst voters.
Well, one argument here is that, you know, if you go down to the bottom of this, we did a generic question on if you were voting for legislature, would you vote for a Republican or a Democrat?
Right.
If you voted for Congress, Republican or Democrat. And it's about a 15-point margin.
Right.
And the difference between Perry and White is 6 points. So one argument is that White's been on TV for 6 weeks. Steve Mostyn and the Back to Basics pack have been on the air for 5 to 7 weeks, something like that, attacking Perry, and that's narrowed that gap. Another argument is that some people are willing to come off of Perry but don't really see a choice in the lieutenant governor's
race.
And
they're just running the table on the Republican side.
But the
side.
Base Democratic vote, just looking at this thing right now, looks like the base difference starting here is 15 points.
Right. That sound right to you?
It has been for the last few elections. I was talking to a group the other day, and I said the mantra for the statewide races should probably be a Republican will always win until they don't.
That's the insight that we contracted with KUT to get.
I'd like to see a bumper sticker that says that within the next week. Anybody?
That's right.
Speaking of Republicans, Evan, let's drill down to that Tea Party number that Ross kind of...
Right, so Ross alluded to the fact that our poll found that 31% of Texans, 31% of respondents self-identified as Tea Partiers. This was interesting to me on its face, but especially compared to a Quinnipiac poll, another polling outfit that came out last week, saying that nationally only 12% of people self-identified as Tea Partiers. That was presented as this is down, and then of course here we come and we're 2.5 times the self-identification with the Tea Party as the rest of the country. And this interests me in the context of the unrest that you discussed, the fact that there are so many undecideds, the fact that there are so many third party candidates doing relatively well, 5 to 7% for a Libertarian, some Green Party folks registering when they're on the ballot. I wonder, though, as you look at tonight, we have a Senate primary in Delaware where the Tea Party candidate may, in fact, defeat the establishment Republican candidate following a similar outcome in Alaska, following a similar outcome in Colorado, following a similar outcome in Utah, following an outcome in the governor's race in Georgia where this happened. I'm wondering at what, where is the inflection point here for the Republicans? Where is the be careful what you wish moment? The Tea Party candidates in some of these races are actually on the verge of snatching defeat from the jaws of victory. Certainly that's what's being predicted potentially in Delaware. In Colorado, the Tom Tancredo has now passed the Tea Party Republican candidate in the polls for governor. It looks like the Democrats are going to win that governor's race. I'm wondering whether that 31% potentially present both an opportunity but also a problem for the Republicans in Texas.
Well, so the argument is that Republicans are essentially fighting within themselves. The Tea Party was stealing votes from other Republicans, and therefore that the Tea Party candidate will lose to the Democrats.
Well, the party is somewhat divided.
If you shake the numbers, the people that identify as, you know, yeah, I'm pretty sympathetic with the Tea Party, are almost all self-identified Republicans or conservatives. So, I mean, the overlap there is clear. What's happening in Texas is kind of interesting is that none of the Republican state officials are in races that have been where they're being blamed for national problems. So if you look at these numbers, the Texans are really mad about the federal government right now. And if you can identify your opponent as being attached to the federal government, as the Perry campaign is trying to do to White, for example, that pulls them down some. But at the same time that Texans are saying, I'm really unhappy about this stuff, and 31% of them are saying I identify with the Tea Party, they're also giving the Republicans a 15% edge in all the statewide races. I mean, in most of the statewide
races.
So
they're not necessarily anti-incumbent across the board.
And they're not blaming state Republicans. They seem to be making something of a distinction between state and federal politics.
Yeah, by and large, that's absolutely true. You have to still remember that there was the time this past year where Senator Cornyn spoke at a Tea Party event at the state capitol and was heckled throughout his entire speech.
Right.
So not all are obviously going to...
And he's probably thankful that he's not on the ballot this year.
Right.
But you have to consider one forward rotation aspect of this is that in a couple of races in the Texas House, Tea Party candidates defeated Republican establishment candidates.
Right.
And are replacing establishment Republicans who are particularly supportive of Speaker Joe Strauss. So now you've got these Tea Party guys in those seats in theory,
right.
And the question is, will they sign on and support Strauss? Will they support somebody running against Strauss, Leo Berman, or as you reported and Jay Root of the AP reported this week, possibly Warren Chisholm?
Right.
Are we looking at the impact at more of a ground level, where maybe the effect will be felt in the Texas House as opposed to state? Why? We just don't know yet.
Yeah, it could make the Texas House more rancorous, though, right? I mean, essentially.
Even more rancorous.
Right.
Even.
Well,
it seems like as long as there are still at least 70 Democrats in the House, they traded in Strauss for Craddock. They're not about to.
What's the over-under on that right now?
I think it's probably, high 60s for the Democrats, mid to high 60s. Okay. The most optimistic Republicans, we'll pick up 10 or 12 seats. I'm conservative about those things. 5 or 6 seats, maybe 4 or 5 seats, somewhere in there.
But 5 or 6 seats would get the Republicans into the 80s.
Right, gets them into the 80s. They're at 77 now, effectively.
And again, the question becomes, does that growth help or hurt Strauss as he potentially fends off a challenge from the right?
It depends on which Republicans come in, and it depends on whether Strauss votes are replacing Strauss votes or anti-Strauss votes are replacing anti-Strauss votes.
Right.
Right. So, I think, speakers are hard to knock off. It's hard to get the House to take the risk to say, we're going to take a swing at Dad, and if we fail, we're not going to have our committee assignments anymore.
Yeah.
But if we win, we might have better committees. It's just hard to get them to take that risk, and I don't think they're mad enough at Strauss to do that yet.
What was the thing they said during the Craddock era? If you're going to shoot the king, you better kill the king.
Right.
Right? That's what happened two sessions ago when
McCall took two sessions to do it.
You better be right. Yeah.
All right, so my topic this week is Governor Perry is running this new ad, Open for Business, on televisions across Texas right now. He walks through a bunch of different small businesses and talks about small businesses being the backbone of Texas. Now, there was a flap over this because a couple of the South Congress small businesses that were shown in the ad, the owners of those businesses objected to their storefronts being shown. Now, from what I understand, there's no legal problem here. So long as you're shooting from a sidewalk, you can shoot whatever businesses that you can reach from that sidewalk. But they don't want to be in a political commercial. And so the rollout has gotten some national attention. It was in the Wall Street Journal online last night as a result of this. But, I was talking to my husband last night, and he said, Bill Clinton, he doesn't think that Bill Clinton would have gotten elected without Jennifer Flowers. And so that negative publicity is actually...
This is the Flo Ziegfeld theory. This is the. Let's just spell my name right.
I'm trying to figure out where that's going.
So essentially, that no publicity is bad publicity, right? So this is actually
some publicity is bad publicity,
right?
And that's the question for y'all. I mean, this rollout obviously didn't go quite as smoothly, but it has gotten a lot of play.
I tend to think that the people that support Perry just view this as another, stupid Austin. I mean, both those businesses were in Austin.
Exactly.
Sorry. Both the businesses were in Austin. It's like Governor Perry at debates where he, puts down mainstream media and kind of winks at the people back at home.
Right.
People back at home are like, yeah, hit him again. And I think that that's kind of the way with this ad. For those that are supporting Perry, when they hear people complaining about, oh, my storefront was used, they go,
shut up,
again.
Hippie.
Yeah.
That's exactly right.
That's right.
So
I don't think it hurts the people that were inclined to think of him in the first place.
You do have to wonder. I'm the ad guy for a Republican governor. I think I'll shoot my ads in South Congress in Austin, Texas. Lockhart's right over there.
Yes. I'm sure the people who own Smitty's would be happy to have you.
Right. Very pretty downtown.
But I do think that the question of ad production and it's such an inside baseball. I mean, I agree with you. The Wall Street Journal picking it up does extend the life of this, but it's such an inside game thing. And it's sort of in some ways like the debate. There are certain people who care enormously, but one or two concentric circles out from Austin, huh?
How many undecided voters care enormously?
Well, I wonder whether this is basically just playing to the base in both cases. The people who are mad, we're not going to vote for the governor anyway.
Mm-hmm.
The people who are not mad, we're going to vote for the governor. And so in the end, it just ends up being
Well, maybe the fact that it got in the Wall Street Journal online means that people just talk about him running for president again.
Right, so it's national coverage.
It's a national coverage.
But,
that's right.
But to your point, here we are talking about the governor's ad.
Right,
we wouldn't be talking about the governor's ad, but for this.
Right, and I had to watch it a couple of times to actually find those businesses.
3 seconds that they're on the air.
Right.
So it actually encouraged more viewing.
Right.
I mean, I know, and it probably benefits him just to have us talking about it.
Pretty I think funny. Bill White's next ad is going to have Texas A&M on the front.
Right.
Just to get, you know.
All right, Ben, let's switch to your topic, which is
the
budget deficit. The budget deficit was predicted to be as high as $18 billion.
And now it's predicted through inside sources, as reported by Dallas Morning News, that
let's credit Bob Garrett did a really good story this weekend that busted open that.
Ben's in a fantasy baseball league with Bob Garrett. Yes. Didn't want to say his name out loud.
I don't want to because he's ahead of me right now. Right. I don't want to mention his name.
Stuff, right.
He's won the title 2 years in a row. Come on.
That's right.
You know, it's now maybe $21 billion. You know, we had talked about this actually in the last podcast, the idea that in 2002, going into November elections 2002, the budget deficit was $5 billion. After the election, it's $10 billion. Now, nobody's suggesting, I don't think yet anyway, that we're all of a sudden going to come to November, second week of November, and it's going to be $40 billion. But there has been a lot of talk over the last week of you know, the idea of playing politics with the number. Are they hiding the number? Are they not hiding the number? Are they making it less than what it actually is so that things look better going into the election?
And measures are getting worse toward the ultimate end number, so that maybe it is just simply the problem is getting worse.
Right. And then that's the other thing that somebody said in the Garrett article is just, you know, all the indicators are going this way, so you expect
the budget number
to go like this. Right. And so you've got, you know, a lot of different groups. You know, the agencies are submitting their 10% cuts right now. I talked to, and even they are trying to be, you know, they're all Perry-appointed agencies, the heads of those agencies, so they're playing nice. They're coming before the LBB. Okay. They're submitting their reports, but some of them are also letting, you know, they're trying to play a little politics on their own, forecasting some gloom and doom scenarios if these kind of 10% cuts go through. Texas Department of Insurance, when they delivered their report, it said if you want to lessen the weight of a car, but you remove two wheels and part of the engine, it ceases to be a car. So if you want to cut 10% out of the Texas Department of Insurance, at some point it ceases to become a regulatory agency, because we can only regulate as our resources allow.
Well, you could do what Paul Berkus suggests in Texas Monthly, and you could just cut whole agencies. Not cut everybody, but just like get rid of the PUC and get rid of, I mean, that's certainly one way to go. But the reality is that I'm not sure you can actually get there, despite what people in politics are saying right now. If it's $21 billion, look, the four of us up here can't do a lot of things. We can do math.
Yeah, the clear.
If it's $21 billion, even if you get rid of the entire, you drain the rainy day fund completely, optimistically call it $10 billion, which it's not, but call it $10 billion. You're still looking at $11 billion to have to cut. No rainy day fund. Nobody wants to raise taxes. You can talk about what happened in the poll. No one has a stomach for that.
Right.
It's just a math problem, and we can all do the math.
Brownsville Democrat Rene Oliveira says that he can deliver $1 billion in expanded sales tax. So is that a new tax?
It is for the people who aren't paying it right now.
Right, but sure. It's not a new one. It's not a new sales tax. Sales tax is already there, but they're expanding it to, possibly expanding it to people. But that's $1 billion. So that, it still is less.
You
than
know
11.
That the public stomach for this, we
the
found
public
in the
stomach
poll,
for
right?
this isn't great. I mean, if you ask them, you know, they sort of do the cat in the hat thing. You know, would you like it on a boat? Would you like it with a goat? And they say no taxes. You know, seven.
It's not a trip pass without
seven,
Ron.
Seven
analogy.
That's not the cat in the hat. It's green eggs and ham. pardon me, Dr. Seuss.
Right. Ordinarily, for a mistake that size, it needs to come out of Ben's mouth.
That's
actually.
Right. 70%, no new taxes. If you say, what if we expanded the sales tax? I don't have the numbers in front of me, but it's in the 90s. It's absolutely not. What if we raised the rate on the sales tax? The big one was, what if we had a state income tax? And 95% are no's.
Right.
If you ask them if they're humans, you only get 92%.
I did think it was interesting that 44% of people we polled said that they would support gambling as a way to close the budget gap, but everything else, all other sources of revenue, are overwhelmingly off the table if you believe these numbers.
Well, it's an interesting thing. If you say revenue or taxes, it
has an impact.
It pollutes the thing. Yeah. So we asked about gaming in our February poll, and you know, all but, you know, something in the order of 70% said they would accept an expanded gaming universe, either on Indian reservations, expanded at racetracks, or full casino gambling. If you ask the same question and say, would you approved gaming as a way to raise revenue for the state, that 70 drops to 44. We asked a marijuana question in May. What do you think about legalization of marijuana? And under certain circumstances, some of them, you know who you are, wanted it under any circumstances.
Some those of them people said, in the governor's head. Right.
Shut up, hippie, right? Some percentage of them said, you know, it should be okay in small quantities, and some percentage said it should be okay for medicinal purposes. Right. We only had about 27% who said absolutely no marijuana. If you say, okay, so if you legalize marijuana and taxed it, what do you think about that? 62% against. Tax is a bad word.
Well, even the hippies don't want to be taxed. Right. I mean, come on.
Look, it's a low service state. This is not news to anybody who lives here, and that's the choice that enough people have made over the last couple cycles that, you know, that's the situation we find ourselves in. But the problem is there's only so many ways this could go.
Right.
If you don't want to cut, but you don't want to raise revenue, what? And honestly, it's incumbent upon all of us and everybody who's listening to this to hold people in both parties accountable and say, you know, we can think about this. I mean, we understand how this goes. You got to do one or the other.
Right.
You don't want to cut, or you do want to cut, or you don't want to raise taxes. Something has to give. If this shortfall is as large as it is, it seems impossible to me that we're going to be able to get there purely on the strength of cuts.
Well, and I just wonder if maybe the size of this shortfall is going to have people maybe, especially a lot of the policy wonks that guide how everything goes in the legislature, if it'll make them on all sides kind of expand what their normal lines are and what their normal thinking is on this. I was doing a story today looking at how different school districts across the state are trying to different ways that they're trying to raise revenue outside of the regular stream. There's a Cypress Fairbanks ISD has just put out an email to its constituents or parents saying, hey, look, we've got this great way to raise a little money for the school fund. If you switch to ambient electricity, we will get $4, and on average, $4 a month from every person that switches and goes through this website. We're not suggesting that you should, but check them out if their rates are good. And as the superintendent told me, the rates have been good.
So
you know, this is a way that they're trying to raise money.
New bake sale.
Yeah, the new bake sale. I went to one of the conservative think tanks in town and asked them about, you know, whether or not maybe this was good for the idea of maybe using some free market principles within school districts and all that. And the answer was, well, actually, if these school districts would just spend as much time, they're spending a lot of time and energy trying to figure out new ways to raise money. If they just spent all that time and energy figuring out how to create more efficiencies in their budget, then everything would be fine. And I think that more the problem is when you're talking about $21 billion, or when you're talking at the local level, hundreds of billions from the SciFair has cut $70 million from their budget over the last few years and increased by 15,000 students.
That you'd have to have a lot of waste in state government.
Well, it's a lot of efficiency to save
to cut $1.04 or $1.05 from general revenue. I mean, that's what $20 billion is.
Right.
You know, that's a lot of waste.
Bottom and line, next session's going to be a disaster.
It's going to be.
Well, we just had a pretty good pruning in 2003.
Right.
I mean, we're not starting from a bloated budget, I guess some people would say. Others wouldn't.
Well, on that Debbie Downer note, I probably didn't arrange these topics in the right order.
Yeah.
That brings us to the end of the recorded section of the Tribcast. So on behalf of Evan, Ross, Ben, our audio engineer Todd, who's around here somewhere, I'm Elise. Thank you for listening.